Start first of all by adjusting your motivation and thinking that you're here in this occasion to listen to these most profound and extensive teachings of the Mahayana. And the reason why you're here to listen to these teachings is because you aspire to be able to benefit sentient beings. Sentient beings who have been your mothers in the past and are as vast as the vastness of space. For their sake, you aspire to reach the precious state of perfect and complete enlightenment, this state that is characterized by the full development of all positive qualities and the total elimination of all negativity. With this particular thought in your mind, please adjust your motivation. Roger started by talking about the need for turning the wheel of Dharma, teaching Dharma to sentient beings. The reason why Dharma is taught to sentient beings is so that the qualities of the minds can be increased and the faults that exist within their minds can be reduced and eventually eliminated. It is stated that it is one of the characteristics of the minds to be able to go through this process of expanding the qualities and removing the faults. It is stated by the great master Dharmakirti in Pramanavartika that the nature of the mind is that of clear light, and this clarity that exists in the mind can be intensified, can be increased. And the mind is similar to the sky. It has this nature that abides all the time. But it is quite possible that from time to time we might have clouds appearing in the sky. These clouds are not part of the nature of the sky. They're just adventitious clouds that arise for a while and then are removed. So this analogy of the sky and the clarity and the expanse of the sky, which sometimes is affected by the presence of clouds, describes very well this situation of the mind. Now, keeping this quality and this analogy describing the mind in our minds, we can actually look into the text that we are studying, which is the Sublime Continuum, composed by Protector Maitreya. And we know that, as we can see in the first page of the root text, that this material that we find here is based on an introduction, is based on some initial introduction of these seven Vajra-like categories that are found in the sutra which was requested by King Ishvara. We know that the first three of the seven categories were presented in the introduction of the text. So the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, are these first three. Following that, we have the potential, which describes the Buddha nature that exists within the minds of sentient beings. Following that, we have enlightenment as being the fifth one. The sixth one is qualities, and the seventh one is enlightened activities of the Buddha. So in brief, these are the seven Vajra categories that we can see that in our commentary, initially they are presented in short, then there is a more extensive explanation, and finally the meaning is given in a concise way at the end as well. This is the general presentation of this material.
Sangha 我就点这个马桶啊，你这个都更快，前面的那个嘛，我就弄定了。家里个这个让个生气，你这，你这个什么查查个什么工作吧，等什么东单吧，你这的要好就去。第一点个东北人的这个东北嘛的，人家门口来点的就过头讲，过头讲我过年的东北就一宿个，这个那个就认得个什么，一宿个忙的呢，铁什么当就去。 我在店里铁什么那样有你你玩的话，同时去铁什么，铁什么的同时个铁什么个我的劲儿，店里一宿给你，店里他前面的，你把人那就在店里，他就娘们那当，前头就娘们那你，买了这边有地方人都，我在你这边就，我在就嗯，看别人家把人不当，我在店里的你，嗯，在店里的你我，我就想起的。
我就想起不得，就那让人忙完办了，上几个，上几个头几个想起，这几个有啊的，等等，你去吧的，今天这边几个想起不得，我就在第用点的时候，想起不个用点的时候到，到第二天不用点，这就得用点个人忙不得用就去，我就在那店里的，就上几个城里的，曾经个叫人几个月不，你这的去完人呢？
Now, this seven Vajra-like categories are actually very, very important points for us to understand. First of all, we mentioned the three jewels, and as I say, we need to make the distinction between the causal and the resultant three jewels. When we talk about the resultant three jewels, we talk about the three jewels that exist in a continuum which is separate from one's own. In other words, we're talking about the three jewels that we identify as being out there, as being the object of our aspirations, as being the goal, the ultimate goal of our practice, the thing that we aspire to reach at the end of our practice. Now, as we say, we can have this aspiration, but we can understand that this is something which is achievable on the basis of the potential that we have. In other words, on the basis of the mind that we have. We quoted previously the great master Dharmakirti in his work Pramanavartika, which says that the mind is like clear light. And here when we use this term clear light, we should know that this can be applied to refer to the mind as well as to the emptiness of the mind. They can both be described as clear light. The nature of the mind is the nature of clear light, but from our side, ordinary beings, we cannot always understand that, we cannot perceive that. Because we do not have this understanding, we go from life to life experiencing different types of suffering, and it will take us a long time to understand the actual nature of the mind, this nature which is like the sky. At the moment, all we can perceive is the cloud, but we need to understand that the cloud is something that just comes and goes. Now, as we study more about the nature of the mind, we will be able to identify different states of mind, different subtleties of mind. We will be able to talk about the gross, the subtle, the most subtle mind. We will be able to make the distinction between the relative and the ultimate mind. And eventually we will be, through that, we will be able to approach this idea of the emptiness of the mind. And initially we would not have a clear idea of that. We just have a very rough conception. In the beginning, what is generated is actually a doubt about the way that the mind really exists. And it is, when we talk about doubt, we need to understand there are two types of doubt. One that is leaning towards the fact and one that is leaning away from the fact. Hopefully we will generate the type of doubt that is leaning towards the fact, towards the reality, the true way that the mind exists. And by following this, eventually we will develop what is called a clear cognition, a mind that understands the nature correctly. And on the basis of that, we will understand the true nature of the mind. And on the basis of that, we can say that we have developed both the aspect of method and the aspect of wisdom. This understanding of the nature of the mind is exactly what is described by the term essence or heart of the Tathagata. And as we say, on the basis of that, one can achieve enlightenment. Enlightenment is presented as the fifth of those seven categories. And in this particular case, when we talk about enlightenment, we talk about the ultimate resultant state. And this state of enlightenment is characterized by a large number of qualities, as well as a large number of enlightened activities that exist and are performed due to the continuum, in the continuum of the Buddha. So these are, in brief, those seven categories, very important things to comprehend, to understand. Now, as we say, we find an initial presentation of those seven Vajra categories in the sutra requested by King Inshvara. And in this particular sutra, there is an analogy that is given. And they said that when you understand the potential that you have, is like having walked along the ocean and having received a gem, a jewel, coming out from the depths of the ocean. And when we receive such a gem, in the beginning, this is something which is unpolished. It just looks like another stone in the beginning, just another pebble. But it has this great value inside it. And again, there is the analogy of going through the gradual purification through three stages of purification. It says, first of all, when you receive this stone, you would have to take away the mud and other gross impurities, because usually such a stone will be encrusted in mud and other salts and so forth. So first of all, it says you have to remove this first gross level of impurities. And then you have to go a little bit deeper, and you will have to start polishing that stone. And once you polish the stone, you start appreciating the color and the shape and the beauty of it. But you don't stop there. You have to go even further to polish it with something finer, like with finer sandpaper or something. There are different means of polishing the stones, right? And finally, you end up with this jewel, which radiates light, which colors comes out very clearly. Now, of course, this analogy can be explained in different ways, but mainly in this context, we will explain it as being able to polish and develop this potential that we have within our own minds. We will polish this potential until we will be able to reach the state of resultant three jewels, this state that we admire like thou, this state that we set to be our future goal. And our text mentioned in the commentary of the text, we gave this explanation of how one has to go through this gradual process of training and purification. And we mentioned how bodhisattvas have to go through 60 different types of training, gradually polishing, gradually refining this potential. Now, in our commentary on page 25, there is a quotation from Master Aryadeva, which makes the distinction between those who belong into the great vehicle lineage, but again, within those, we can make a distinction of those who have the sharp faculties and those who have, let's say, the dull faculties. And it is said that those of the sharp faculties actually generate a comprehension of emptiness prior to entering into the great vehicle. Those of the slower, let's say, mental capacities, they first of all generate an understanding of bodhicitta, they will develop their methods, and then after that they will strive towards development of realization of emptiness. Rinpoche is actually going back into this quotation of Master Aryadeva, where he says actually this can be interpreted in different ways. He describes the different levels of of merit, or those who first develop merit in comparison to those who first develop their realization of emptiness. And Rinpoche was saying that this actually can be interpreted from the point of view of the three scopes, or it can be interpreted from the point of view of the four seals of Buddhism. Now, to mention those four seals of Buddhism, the first one says that all compounded phenomena are impermanent. The second one says that all contaminated phenomena have the nature of suffering. The third one says that all dharmas are selfless. And the fourth one says is the one that says nirvana is peace. And actually we can see how those four seals of Buddhism can relate or can remind us of the practices of the three scopes. So first of all, we talk about all compounded phenomena who have this nature of being impermanent. When we talk about impermanence, this can be understood in this level, the gross one and the subtle one. And the best example of gross impermanence is the example of death. Now, what we do, the main meditation that we do we start by doing in the small scope, is meditation on death and impermanence. So we can see the first seal can act as a reminder or can relate to the practices of the small scope. In the second seal, we make what is announced is that contaminated phenomena have the nature of suffering. Now, within the practices of the middle scope, we spend quite a lot of time analyzing the nature of samsara and looking at the suffering that exists within samsara in order to generate the mind of renunciation and so forth. So this one, again, is a reminder of the nature of samsara, of the suffering. Now, with the third seal, we talk about selflessness, and this, of course, is this one indicates emptiness. And the last one, we talk about nirvana being pacification. And when we talk about this nirvana or this pacification, we have to take it to refer to the great vehicle liberation, the great vehicle nirvana. And if we're talking about practices of attaining this state of peace within the context of the great vehicle, of course one has to generate the thought that this peace, this state of nirvana, is to be attained and established for every sentient being, not just for oneself. So this, of course, brings us into the subject of bodhicitta. And you can see how with a presentation of emptiness and a presentation of the mind of bodhicitta, we have a presentation of the practices of the great scope.
that Dishon Rula, Shula, Ju and the Shi, Yangan and Yuan Shavadi, Tishula Tondi Yuayendu, or that you then get in the Chichi Jodi, and I'm not Jaji Udin, Chichi Domje Dong, Jaji Udin, then the Najazor and Bojidim are Songsam.
Kunarin Bojala de Dakdan, Dakneki Korla de Chick Tama Imba, Chick Tama Imba, then Kumacho.
Karisugo, no, Juichua, not the Zuyan Kajigo, dug the Songayans and Pombo de Matonayans, or that day and do W. Yosi, or the Pombo Matonari loves the Yosi, Ronjet of a D. Sigidi, Yosi in his son, we were. That Ronjet of a Diuji Tomas, Duna, Song with Doctor Genji Tomas, Matonga Lakaji, Matonga Lakaji, Pombo, that Dungi, a lot of things of Jimmy Dimmy. Dogsigidin Pombola attending, Pombodi Dola attending, but that in every Chinese tombard.
We're further down in our commentary. We're examining a statement that again takes us back into the four seals of Buddhism. And first of all, again, we're talking about the phenomenon of impermanence. And we said, again, Rinpoche is stressing the fact that we can talk about impermanence in a gross or in a subtle level. And in the gross level, this should always remind us of death. And this meditation of death and impermanence, again, takes us into the first scope of the Lamrim. And talking about suffering, this describes, again, the nature of samsara, which are usually practices of the middle scope. When we come into the third seal, where we're talking about selflessness, and in right before now, Rinpoche said that selflessness should remind us of emptiness. We can almost equate the two terms. Nevertheless, there is a way. There are variations of presenting this, and there are ways of talking about the self and the aggregates, and making the distinction of one of them being clean and pure, and the other being unclean. So you can find some presentation where it says that, for example, the self is clean, but the aggregates are unclean, substances that are unclean. But if you make a distinction like this and you completely separate the self from the aggregates, this is done for the purpose of establishing that there is a self that abides independently. Independently existent. And here we want to stress this lack of the self, right? Lack of the existence of an independently existent self. And finally, again, when we come to the last point about peace and nirvana, peace and pacification, it relates to the practices of the Great Vehicle.
So the Hindu some of the Hindu religious, they believe that the eye is pure and act is impure, and they believe that they exist that exist separately without depending on each other. So here the view of the Buddhist philosopher that is depend on I guess depend on the I do not exist. I do not exist as a being. I, which is self existing, self sufficiently. I existing. You see, I that which self sufficient. Exist being self sufficient. So there's no such I. That's empty. So that's what's shown, and the meaning of the empty, the phenomena are empty and no self. So the meaning of general meaning of self. So that is expressed the common one self. Not talking as the high school the like the Madhya Prasangik school. Not talking that way. So what you're saying is, in general schools, general Buddhist schools, according to you, then you differentiate the empty and self, so like that. So meaning of self is what you're saying. Having no self.
Oji da dina yinba yindu ji da garse go chi ji dom ji si ji di ji da ji tu ji ma to yuwa ma ri di ji sa chin bu da ga to ji so je jen o sang yang gu yuwa ri dina yinba yindu ji di lopun shentan diwa jati shiva di shonju maram nana namka li jang chuji da jimen cheba tuwarisha wase songa chigdang wajig da deni yangju ti ngawo chili jang chuji domje tenpan du wase na yuwa da ti ngawo chili jang ngaga drase nanda yangju tongga drayon yuwa ri wajig da tena nangjenga ngasu ki poni lomba kashi go ki shakjana trishang da tena yu na Terima terjadi, jadi di modela pada cuci domsi itu semua. Terima itu terjadi kerja terus domsi ke, wajib di modela jadi dah kasih ke sen level itu aja. Di modela nasi domsi matang, sahaja domsi dengar apa, cuci domsi domsi dah mepan. Yang ni dia anu siapa waktu itu so dia tiang gaya. Tapi ni jadi apa yang na long korang di terjadi macam cuci cuci, ni terus dali cuci domsi.
Saying that was making the comment about the four seals of Buddhism, that they're just four lines, but the meaning of those lines, it is quite important. And also Arish and the Deva has talked about the importance of the sound describing I, as the I, the conception of I, as well as the sound of emptiness. And to understand the importance of that, you can see that in places such as Tibet, for example, there is the tradition of having an inscription of the four seals of Buddhism on bells. And when you ring the bell, it is said that this you create a sound which actually carries out the meaning of emptiness. And in places like Taiwan, for example, you have a tradition where you have larger bells, and in the bell you can also inscribe the whole Heart Sutra and so forth. Yeah, the idea is that you ring the bell, it creates the sound, which is the sound proclaiming emptiness, and this is carried by the wind.
我觉得现在应该也能在那里去玩的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现在的我觉得现
it is, as I say, first of all, the first line describes those who have less amount of merit in terms of understanding emptiness. So this will be the beings who will try to develop their merit, and this describes beings who fall into the category of the lesser and the small vehicle. And then finally we have those who have accumulated enough merit to enter in the practices of the great vehicle. So we come back now into the point where we had left off. We have explained potential, and we have explained how the potential is refined and further developed by relying on 60 different practices. Following that, we have enlightenment. And in the case of enlightenment, our commentary presents 16 different types of compassion that qualify the state of enlightenment. And following that, we have a presentation of qualities, and finally the presentation of enlightened activities.
Ojida dinayimba yandu dandi niwala zamji tambuda
那当不上去了，你外地用的，什么地城里也没人住，当不了什么事呢？什么个能够当不上就的？在上去上去，就是你店里个人把这个干的事呢，上去不光个店吧呢，养养养个去住去店吧，过年是，他几个看别人家把年包的，养些去住去我当的，看上去把店这个嘛了，店这个几点的，看的店不几到是让人家那边打包了。
So actually the text here has broken up this group of seven Vajra categories, and it has taken the first four as the first group and the remaining three as another group. So in this group of three, the first one which is presented is enlightenment. And our text says that we have already explained how on the basis of relying on the 60 practices, one purifies their potential, and at the end of this purification, one attains the pure state of the mind by removing adventitious stains, and one reaches the state of enlightenment. This state of enlightenment is characterized by the 16 aspects of compassion. Now, in the context of the practice, the 60 practices of the Bodhisattvas, within that, again, we had a group of 16 aspects of great compassion. And here, within the context, of enlightenment, we have another list of 16 types of compassion. It is within Abhidharma that we find the use of slightly different terms for those things, one applying to the level of the Bodhisattva, one applying to the level of the Buddha, because it is understood that once you reach the state of enlightenment, there will be certain special qualities that have been developed in your mind, and therefore your compassion would have some special aspects. Now, we start enumerating those. So the first one is rootless and non-abiding. So it has no root and it does not abide. That's number one. The second one is pacification and close pacification. The third one is naturally clarifying light or naturally clear light.